What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play! Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
It's just going to go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
We are talking tight ends here on Fantasy Football Today. Top 12 tight ends, an early look. Really interesting because we had some very encouraging rookie performances, including obviously Sam Laporta, who led all tight ends with 10 touchdown catches. No one else had more than six. So that was an interesting season in terms of touchdowns for the tight ends. Welcome, everybody. It's Adam, Dave, Jamie, Heath. We're all here. We got some coaching news as well. And congratulations, Heath. The Chiefs are in the Super Bowl once again.
Well, they're not. They are where they always are in the AFC Championship game. We'll see if they can beat, I think, is the best team in football right now in their building.
Yeah, but they're going to win. I mean, it's like they're going to win.
Well, it depends what conspiracy theory you believe. Is it the Taylor Swift conspiracy theory or the logo conspiracy theory?
Oh, I am not up to date on these my conspiracy theories here. Please fill me in.
Well, I mean, the Swift one is obvious that she just brings eyeballs to the TV. The logo one is, was it the last 3 years or 4 years, that the logo colors have been the Super Bowl contenders?
Participants.
The logo colors? What
yes,
logo?
The Super Bowl logo colors have determined who the Super Bowl participants have been.
Really?
Yes, and it's purple and red.
Interesting. So the Lions are going to wear purple against the Chiefs? Okay. Anyway, we'll get more into that tomorrow. Dave, are you on the show tomorrow?
I hope so.
Okay, good. I'll do game of the week then. We'll get more into the games tomorrow. Some quick tight end notes. 12, this is that. I mean, we talk a lot about being top five, top two in targets to be top five. At tight end, you got to be one or two on your team in targets almost always to be a top five tight end. How about 12 of the top 13 tight ends, not per game, just overall fantasy points. 12 of the top 13 tight ends were first or second on their team in targets. That's insane. I know Dave, I gave this trivia question to Dave. I know he knows who the only one who wasn't. Do you guys know who the only tight end to finish top 13 in PPR and not be first or second on his team in targets was?
Total points, guys.
Yeah.
Total points scored.
No. I think like using total points and total targets is a really bad way to do this.
Agreed.
No, it's not. There's
yes,
something. No,
yeah, well, the guys who played 17 games and didn't get hurt as much, but finished
on their teams. Ahead. Yeah, on their teams. And they all didn't, first of all, they didn't all play 17 games, not even close. It's, you know, but it's Taysom Hill is the only one. Which makes sense, right? It's
a dumb stat got even dumber.
No, it's not a dumb stat at all. You don't want to be third on your team in targets. It's a very important stat.
Well, we can do it Heath's way too. Can you name the tight end in the top 13 that did not finish top two on their team in targets on a per game basis?
No.
Darren Waller.
Okay, there you go.
He was 13th in points per game, and he was third on the Giants in targets.
But he wasn't third in targets per game. He was just third in targets.
Correct.
Right. Tight end yards per route run. Thank you, Jamie. Yards per route run leaders among tight ends. Minimum 40 targets. George Kittle, 1. Trey McBride, 2. Mark Andrews, Travis Kelce, TJ Hockenson, Sam Laporta, and then Kmet Njoku. Ingram, and number 10, Tanner Hudson. We'll get into tight ends. I'll get into all the rankings a little bit later, but let's do news and notes. After I tell you about the Sports Podcast Awards, you only have a few days left. Voting ends this week. So please vote for us at sportspodcastawards.com. There's a link in the episode description. There's a QR code on YouTube. There's a computer near you. Sportspodcastawards.com. Click on vote now, and we're in the best fantasy betting and gaming podcast category, something like that. Vote for Fantasy Football Today, and we appreciate if you've already voted. We appreciate it. It's so quick. It takes about 30 seconds. We need your help. We want to win this one, and it's up to you. It's all fan vote. Sportspodcastawards.com. Best fantasy betting and gaming category. News and notes. Okay, the Titans look like they're going to hire Cincinnati offensive coordinator Brian Callahan as their head coach. They're wrapping that up. And the Bears hired Shane Waldron, the former Seattle offensive coordinator, to be their new OC. So, Jamie, what's bigger news to you? Tennessee getting a new head coach or Chicago getting that new offensive coordinator?
Tennessee getting a new head coach.
All right. What do you guys, you like these moves or what?
It was an interesting hire. I mean, you know, he wasn't, I think, on the forefront of, you know, assistant coaches who were expected to get jobs, especially, you know, in the first, one of the first hires, you know, of the vacant jobs that became available. So they're going a different direction, going from a defensive coach to an offensive coach. I would love to see him bring his father with him, who's one of the best offensive line coaches maybe in NFL history. He's currently on the Brown staff. So that would be interesting. But in any event, you know, hopefully he'll do what he was able to accomplish with Joe Burrow, with Will Levis, you know, turn him into one of the better quarterbacks in the league. I don't think that's necessarily the case because of talent difference, but, you know, this is a good hire for Levis, a good hire for the offense, and they have a lot of work to do because the line, the backfield, the receiving core, all needs to be reshaped in some way, shape, or form, and we'll see how that all unfolds.
I think we got a real question still about what that offense will look like because he didn't call plays in Cincinnati and we don't know if he'll call plays in Tennessee. He might hire an offensive coordinator to do that because I don't know that he's ever done it.
It's a good point. Callahan comes from the Shanahan-McVay coaching tree. So I think you can imagine some of the elements to it. Can they find a receiver that can work like Cooper Kupp, Puka Nacua? And then you can look at the Bengals guys, someone who can be that type of dominant target hog in Tennessee. I would go after somebody like that, even if the quarterback situation is not ideal. Completely new offense. Forget about everything you know about Tennessee and what they've done the past 5-6 years. I'm curious to see how it shakes out.
How about the last 8 years for Tennessee? They have been bottom 7 in pass attempts 8 straight seasons. And they've been bottom 3 in pass attempts in 4 of the last 5 seasons. So, yes, we definitely need something new. And just looking at the Bengals' offense in the last 3 seasons with Joe Burrow, they were pretty pass-heavy. They were 31st and 30th in running back rush attempts the last 2 years. So almost the exact opposite of what Tennessee has been. I know one has nothing to do with the other, but It is different than what we've seen in Tennessee. Just saying there. How about for the Bears?
This could be two interesting landing spots for potentially Joe Mixon if he's released, and T. Higgins if he's actually free.
That's a good point. All right, what about for the Bears with Shane Waldron coming over from Seattle? I think you'd have to say he did a pretty good job with Geno Smith. I have no idea if this has anything to do with Shane Waldron, but the Seattle Seahawks, the last 3 years, they were bottom 3 in time of possession. They were also pretty bad on third down. So hopefully that changes. But Heath, what do you think about the Bears' new offensive coordinator, what it means for their guys?
I mean, I think we don't know who their guys are. But assuming it's going to be Caleb Williams, and I've seen some people speculating on Twitter that the hiring of Shane Waldron points more towards Caleb Williams, I think it's probably a good thing. But not something I'm going to make any big sweeping changes to yet. The biggest change for the Bears is, are they going to have a quarterback who runs the ball 10 times a game?
Right. Do you guys see any dynasty opportunities here with these hires? Does Will Levis get a big boost for you or anything like that?
I mean, the one guy that I keep looking at for if we're talking just these two teams is Tajay Spears. And, you know, the hope would be is that he does get the opportunity to be the guy. And so, you know, if he does, then, you know, we could be looking at a, you know, certainly I think probably a 2-3 year window of maybe good production. And but for this year, in just terms of redraft, you know, he'll vault into, you know, close to the top 20 if he is the starter there.
Are we completely out on Treylon Burks?
Ooh, I have an email about that. Let me read the email. FantasyFootball@CBSi.com is our email address. Great time to send some emails. Got your get your questions answered. FantasyFootball@CBSi.com. That is the letter I. Okay, this is from Kelly. Where's Kelly from, Dave?
Wilmington, North Carolina.
Yeah. Just curious about your thoughts on Treylon Burks. He was a huge letdown this year. Yada, yada, yada. So do you think I'm crazy for believing that he's going to be better, or is it time to pull the plug on Treylon Burks if he's on your roster?
If you've got him on your dynasty roster, you're not going to get anything for him in trade, so you might as well wait and see how it shakes out with the new offense there. He's had all kinds of injury issues that have hurt him, plus quarterback issues over the first 2 years of his career. I'm looking at our redrafts that we've already done this year, and he went after round 10 in both. It's exactly the type of late round dart throw to look at even now, even knowing that, yes, Tennessee is going to add another wide receiver. Probably Burks isn't going to be the number one guy, but he could end up elevating to be better than he's been. Not saying that he's ever going to be an alpha wide receiver in that offense, but someone who can contribute, maybe be a number three type of receiver in fantasy with, I guess, a glimmer of upside to be a little bit better than that. I think he's got a chance if he can A, stay healthy, B, get accustomed to this offense, and C, have a quarterback that doesn't completely stink throwing him passes. We'll see what happens.
Like, for dynasty purposes, the question's going to be, what do you do when we get to April or May or whenever your rookie draft is? Because Treylon Burks is definitely going to be in that conversation of, do you want to hold him or draft someone in the third round? Maybe even the second round, depending on how deep your roster is. Some guys that I have him close to in my dynasty rankings, he's right behind Romeo Doubs, Elijah Moore, Dontavian Wicks. I'd rather have those guys on my roster than Treylon Burks. He's right ahead of Rondale Moore, Josh Palmer, Darnell Mooney. I'd rather have Burks than those guys. So it's, but he is somebody who's definitely in the conversation for maybe getting cut. I would definitely rather have any second round pick than Burks. And I think I'd probably rather have a third round pick. There's not a huge sample of guys who have been as inconsequential as he has their first 2 years in the league, and then all of a sudden start mattering. There are some. The cause isn't lost, but it's a long bet.
Yeah. I mean, can we draw any Nico Collins comparisons? Because Nico Collins was not as inconsequential, but pretty damn inconsequential. And then obviously got a huge coaching staff and quarterback upgrade, and bam. I know it's different. I mean, Burks has just been battling different things for 2 years, basically asthma and knee issues and whatnot. But do you see any parallels there?
I mean, the narrative makes sense. You know, does Will Levis play like CJ Stroud? I don't think that's going to be the case, you know, but again, system will matter. So, yeah, I mean, that's probably the hope, is that he doesn't do much for 2 years and then he comes on his third season and starts to become a playmaker. And clearly the guys playing opposite him are going to matter, you know, because it's not just adding one wide receiver. I mean, they need to really overhaul this entire receiving core, you know. So is Hopkins still there? Is somebody else brought in? Is two other guys brought in? You know, so he's going to have a role. It's just a matter of what kind of role he's going to have.
Do you remember what type of talent he was when he came into the league, like as a draft prospect?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We loved him.
He was supposed to replace A.J. Brown. I mean, that's one of the biggest mistakes a franchise has made in recent years.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But I thought talent-wise, he was good. I thought that he'd be able to contribute. I'm not sure if he was used the right way. And obviously things in Tennessee were messy when he joined the franchise. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think he gets another shot, but Heath, you said it best. It's a long shot type of thing.
All right, let's see what else we have in the news and notes world. The Raiders are close to hiring former Chargers GM Tom Telesco to be their GM. The Eagles fired their offensive coordinator Brian Johnson, so we'll see what moves they make. The Packers just fired Joe Barry, their defensive coordinator. Debo Samuel is questionable with an injury. There's an article on CBSSports.com with something like 15 stats about the champion, about the AFC and NFC championship games. And it's a really great article. One of them is that in the Brock Purdy era, since he became the starter, San Francisco is 18-1 when McCaffrey, Debo, and Purdy play the entire game, and they are 2-4 otherwise. So we'll see if Debo can get out there for the game against the Lions this weekend. Kansas City guard Joe Tooney is questionable. Buffalo, you know what? Let me go through the rest of the news just for this weekend here, and then we'll get into some other offseason stuff. So Detroit signed Zach Ertz. That's because Brock Wright, their number two tight end, has a forearm injury and is unlikely to play this week. Also, guard Jonah Jackson for Detroit is likely out this week. They're hoping if they make the Super Bowl that he could be back for the Super Bowl. He's a great player for them. Their center, Frank Ragnow, is going to play through an injury. Okay, now on to some more offseason related stuff. The Bills express support for Stephon Diggs. And Gabe Davis says he wants to test free agency. So, Dave, right now, are we operating under the assumption that Diggs is going to come back or still up in the air?
I think it's still up in the air. I think that there's still an opportunity for Buffalo to try and upgrade. They're going to have to do something. They're letting Gabe Davis go. I don't blame them for doing that. They need to find another playmaker at wide receiver. I don't think Diggs is that guy anymore. And so if they can try and move on from him, I think they will try. And if
it's going to cost a lot, though, right?
They can handle it.
It's going to cost.
It's going to be very, very expensive. Very, very expensive.
It's a $31 million cap hit for 2024 if they cut him.
Right before June 1st, it's got to be a post June 1st cut or trade.
Which I believe it's $25
million. Which is still a huge thing.
The 25 cap.
I don't think it's that high after June 1st.
All right.
Well, it's that high over several years. Like it's you don't just that money doesn't just go away. It just you spread it out.
Yeah, it's 2 years, right? So if you do it after June 1st, right, it's 2 years. I think you spread it out over.
Correct.
Okay, let's see. Green Bay is determined to figure out why Christian Watson keeps having hamstring issues. He said he spent a lot of his own money last offseason to get to the bottom of it. Obviously, you know, they still have some work to do there, so they want to keep him healthy. Cleveland wants Joe Flacco and Nick Chubb back. And a couple other things about this weekend. No running back has won the rushing title and made the Super Bowl since?
Emmitt Smith.
No, good guess. He is one of the only running backs. I think the last two running backs, maybe the only two running backs to win the Super Bowl and the rushing title are Smith and Terrell Davis. The last guy to go to the Super Bowl and win the rushing title was Sean Alexander in 2005. So Christian McCaffrey is trying to join that club. And Detroit has lost 11 straight road playoff games, longest streak in NFL history.
I believe the last time they won a road playoff game, it was in San Francisco.
In Candlestick.
Oh, how about
I think it was before Candlestick, actually. Oh. And it was in the 1957, I think it was.
This article is so fun. 15 facts. Let's see. On the website, it says 15 wild facts to know about the title games. So I recommend it on CBSSports.com. And let's see what the stat about Emmitt Smith was. The only rushing title winners to win a Super Bowl are Emmitt Smith, who did it three times, and Terrell Davis in 1998. Okay, we'll take a break and we'll talk tight ends. I have a couple more emails to get to as well. We'll be right back with our top 12 tight ends for 2024 after this.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up.
Crispy, crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Topping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Okay, let's take a look at the tight end position. And Sam Laporta was the number one guy, but not per game. Per game, he was third. He was number two per game in non-PPR, third in half and full PPR. Travis Kelce, once again, your number one tight end in full PPR per game. Per game, number one Kelce in both half and full PPR. Okay, so first question for tight end is, was this position more difficult to rank at this point in January than the other three? Did anybody find that to be the case?
No.
Just you.
Yeah, I thought it was more difficult because there's the big Kelce thing, right? Let's just, well, obviously we're doing this exercise assuming he's coming back, but is he done? Is he washed up? You know, it's going to be 35. There's that. When I see Laporta's stats, it's great, but Kyle Pitts as a rookie, he set the receiving yards record, and he was a total dud in year two. So if you're going to make Laporta your number one overall tight end, you'd like to have a little bit more than just 1 year, right? And then there's Andrews. I think he's a little bit tricky. There's some X factors there with him. McBride, they're probably going to add. I think they're in a very good position to add Marvin Harrison. I did think this was tougher than the other positions. I think there are more variables with the guys at the top. No one else feeling that?
Well, I mean, there's certainly a lot to still be determined, you know, with the draft and free agency and, you know, just impacting not just them, the tight ends themselves, but also their quarterbacks, their teammates, you know, systems are going to be impacted. I mean, look, we could sit here and say Sam Laporta can do exactly the same thing, but he's going to have a new offensive coordinator, you know, so Trey McBride's going to have, you know, hopefully some help on the team. You know, Kyle Pitts is such a wild card in all of this because with the right quarterback and coach, he may be the best tight end in football. Travis Kelce comes back. You saw what he just did a week ago. I mean, yeah. You know, there's so many different variables with this, but I guess it's just, I know where you're coming from, Adam. It doesn't seem like it's, the answer is not hard. You know, it's just
harder.
I don't view it that way, but I get where you're coming from. The premise is correct. Yes. It's not exactly, okay, they just fall in line evenly. You know, you have to, you know, make some tough calls, but you know, that's why we're doing it in January. It's not something we're drafting right now.
Yeah.
Right. Harder, easier suggests that like any of these super closely resemble what they're going to look like in August. I think maybe you just put a lot more thought into it.
No, I don't think I put it. Well, when I did the rankings, well, I mean, that's the problem, right? When I did the rankings, you know, at the very end of the season, I didn't put much thought into it. I didn't really have time to put that much thought into it. Then when I go and I prepare for the show and I start putting more thought into it, you start to see things that, oh, I didn't realize this. I didn't realize that Mark Andrews had his lowest target per route run rate since his rookie season, you know, but, and the Ravens didn't really throw that much more. This, you know, I don't know, just some things that pop up, but I didn't realize that Kyler Murray really wasn't that good compared to what he usually does. You know, he had basically his worst yards per game of his career, except for 2022, but in 2022, he had that one game where he threw like one pass or something. So I don't know. It's just a lot of things that have popped up. And then I think, I don't know. I'm guessing that your rankings right now for all of the positions are not what they were 3 weeks ago when we did this, right?
Well, I mean, you know, just from compiling the list and then doing our shows, because we've done the shows, like you said, it's almost a month after I actually asked you guys to send them in. And as we found out with running backs and receivers, and I think quarterbacks also, I know Dave had some changes. I know Dan, when he was on with us in regards to one of the positions, he had some changes. I think he's the same thing.
Oh, me too. Yeah.
You know, so there's definitely been things that have gone on from week 18 through the divisional round of the playoffs that have altered opinions. And like you said, it was a matter of, you know, I hope not everybody rushing through it, but, you know, trying to get it done and get it done properly and, you know, just having different opinions on things. It's like we do our rankings from Monday to Friday. They change by the time we get to Sunday morning, just based on more information that we acquire. So it's what I'm referencing is you could see all of our rankings. There's seven of us in the rankings on the site, cbsports.com. And again, they may be different for a few people now from what the list that you're seeing.
Yeah. And I will put a link to the tight end rankings in the episode description as well, so you can follow along. All right, well then let's get into it here. Let's do 1, 2, and 3. Who are 1, 2, and 3 in your rankings? Dave, Richard?
I think the question that you should have asked, by the way, is which position that we've ranked is most likely to have a change at the top between now and August? And to me, the answer is tight end. So all this is in pencil for me. Laporta is at the top, number one. I've got Andrews two. I've got Kelsey three.
Oh, okay. Andrews two. All right. Heath, how about you?
Laporta, McBride, Kelsey.
Oh, Andrews not even in the top three. Jamie, how about you?
Same exact as Heath. Laporta, McBride, Kelsey.
Okay, so Laporta, Andrews, Kelsey, Laporta, McBride, Kelsey, Laporta, McBride, Kelsey, and I went Laporta, Kelsey, Andrews. And, okay, McBride's fourth for me, so does that mean Andrews is fourth for... And do we have the same top four in some order? Andrews?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Andrews is four for me now.
And Dan, I think of four for you? Everybody had... I know everybody had Laporta and McBride in their top four. I don't know if anybody had Andrews. I'll look while we move on to the next.
I might have. I think I had Hawkinson ahead of Andrews at one point, but yeah, Andrews ahead of Hawkinson now.
Yeah,
there was.
I had Hawkinson ahead of Kelsey
up there. You know, just with. But I know for sure that Laporta and McBride were in everybody's top four.
Okay,
and they still are.
So everyone has,
and not everybody had Andrews. Laporta one.
But all four of us did have Laporta one, and everyone had all four of us had Laporta, Kelsey, McBride, and Andrews in the top four, and everyone on this show had Laporta one. So yeah, like Dave, you just talked about changes. How confident are you in Sam Laporta, tight end one?
Reasonably, just because he had 14.1 PPR points per game, 10 games with 11 or more PPR points last year. His first year in the league, there theoretically is room for him to be better. I don't see the Lions adding any major talent at wide receiver or tight end. I think they're pretty stacked as it is. It comes down to play caller. And are they really going to bring in a play caller that's going to try and completely reshape what's been working for them this year? That's tough to believe. I think that Laporta is probably in the best spot to see the least amount of change and still be able to develop and grow his game from year one to year two, maybe even see a few more targets per game and be a great fantasy tight end and one that picks up a lot of touchdowns.
I'm pretty confident Laporta is going to be ranked number one for me, but like we've been a couple of years, two or three years now where we've got one tight end in round one. And then for a year or two, we had Andrews in round two. I'm not drafting a tight end before round three, and one will be a lot closer to two and three than he's been in the past.
It will be interesting to see average draft position if Kelsey does return, because you know, no matter I think what we say, it's hard to overlook that name, especially if he has another game or two games like what we just saw. You know, so if he has a monster playoff run, which started last week, then you could say, okay. I mean, even the first game, you know, 7 for 71. I know he had the drops, but 7 for 71, a 2-touchdown game against Buffalo, another 70-plus yards and a score against Baltimore. And if they, you know, somehow get to the Super Bowl, another big game there, and he says, you know what, I'm coming back, then it's, okay, why would I take Laporta? Why would I take McBride when I know what this guy has given me? And even in a down season, you just said he was still number one in points per game. So there's still that allure of down year for Kelsey, 34, still, okay, aging 35, but still getting the job done more so than what these guys might be able to achieve. And so that's the thing I look at. And I just went back and looked. So Dan Schneier and Chris Towers both had Travis Kelce still number one.
Okay. I want Kelce to be number one. I want to put Kelce one. He's Kelce, you know? And in 2021, I'll remind everyone, it was not a great year for him. Like a lot of lower metrics, and then his last five games of the regular season, Travis Kelce had fewer than 35 yards in four of his last five games. And then I don't know if anybody remembers, in the playoffs, he averaged 100 yards in three games and had four touchdown catches. So it's kind of similar. Like he had much better. He went off in the playoffs. But at that point...
He was 31 then, though.
Yeah. No, he was 32, right? Because this was his 34 season. That was his 32 season. I think he had turned 33. Is he 35 now? I think he just turned 35. Mark Andrews actually had a better year than him that year. Mark Andrews had his tight end one season, and then Kelsey bounced back in 2022 with a huge season. He was incredible. He had 110 catches, 1,338 yards, 12 touchdowns. You're right. It's the same thing with Diggs. I made the same exact case. The end of Diggs' 2021 season was bad, and he stunk in the playoffs. That's the difference between him and Kelce in 2021. And Diggs had a huge 2022, and Kelce had a huge 2022. Now they're both a year older, so it's harder to buy back in. I get it. We'll see.
2 years older.
Yeah. Yep. They're both 2 years older than they were then. Right. All right. Do you think McBride has tight end one overall potential?
For sure.
McBride's numbers from when Ertz left, points per game, he was number one.
Yeah. Those 10 games, his pace was 112 catches, 1,114 yards, 5 touchdowns. Really, that made him number one in that stretch?
His volume points per game, I think it's 14.6, which would have been better than what Kelce finished at.
Okay. That's not very good, though. That's not a standout season. 14.6.
No, but, you know, I mean, for essentially doing it on the fly, you know, being vaulted into the number one role, and, you know, part of that was Kyler Murray coming back from an ACL tear, you know, so the hope would be full off season of those two guys together. I mean, look, I know Dan certainly has his issues with McBride. If you listen to the episode I did with Heath 2 weeks ago on Heath's Dynasty podcast, he's not a big fan of McBride, or at least not as high in McBride, I think, as we were. I think the upside is there for him to in PPR to be the number one tight end because of what you just said, you know, on pace for 100 catches. I know Ingram just did that, but that's hard to overlook at that position. And as their receiving core stands right now, even if Marquise Brown comes back, he's easily their best guy. And so, you know, first or second in targets is definitely going to be on the table. Better play from their quarterback, I think, is on the table. And hopefully, you know, he just continues to mature into that role. So definitely took the sophomore leap that we like to see for this position. And now going into year three can be dominant. You know, so I actually had a hard time with Laporta versus McBride in PPR just based on what the upside could be for him as a pass catcher.
Okay.
And those after Zach Ertz disappeared stats also include a 3-for-22 in a Clayton Tooney start against the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, you're it's a good point. If they draft Marvin Harrison, is that a big downgrade for McBride for you?
I'm not a big downgrade. It's a downgrade, but not a big downgrade.
Do you think he averaged 8.5 targets per game in his last 10 games? I don't disagree that he's not going to see good target volume from week to week. He's a top five tight end. But what would it take for him to continue to see that type of volume with, and we don't have to call it Marvin Harrison specifically, with an addition to the passing game in Arizona at some point this offseason?
Well, that should be the expectation. But it's the same. It's the Stefanski offensive system, which in Cleveland has been a 26-27% target share for tight ends basically for 5 years, except for when Deshaun Watson's been there. He hasn't thrown to tight ends quite as much. The difference has been in Cleveland for 2 or 3 years, they didn't trust one guy with that volume. It was always kind of splitting it up. In Arizona, it was pretty much all Zach Ertz with a little bit of Trey McBride sprinkled in. And then when Ertz went down, it was pretty much all Trey McBride. So maybe it's not 8.5 targets per game, but I would expect that the efficiency is going to get a little bit better, and the touchdowns specifically, if they have Marvin Harrison, are going to get a little bit better.
Okay, let's get to tight ends 5 through 8. 1 through 4 are in some order: Laporta, McBride, Kelce, and Andrews. With Kelce coming in at third for all three of Jamie, Dave, and Heath, and Laporta number one for all four of us. All right, so Jamie, you can start. Who are tight ends 5 through 8 for you?
5 is Kincaid, 6 is Ingram, and 7 is Kittle.
And 8?
Oh, I'm sorry, 8 is Hockenson in pencil.
Sorry, Kittle. I'm sorry, Kincaid. Sorry, do it one more time.
Kincaid, Dalton Kincaid, Evan Ingram, George Kittle, TJ Hockenson.
Okay, Dave?
Kincaid is 5th for me. I've got Hockenson 6 because I don't think Evan Ingram can repeat what he did last year. So Hockenson 6, Evan Ingram is 7, Kittle is 8. And Kittle's kind of the placeholder for where there's a tier break between the second tier of tight ends and the third group of tight ends.
Yeah, I have this is probably the area where mine have changed the most. And I don't think there's so many moving parts here, but I would right now probably go Kittle and then Kincaid, and then Hockenson, and then Ingram.
Okay, so you all three have Kincaid, Kittle.
I said Kittle, then Kincaid, but right, yeah, oh, right, not in order. Yes.
Right, right. So in some order, Kincaid, Kittle, Hockenson, Ingram. Right? Yeah. That would probably be if the consensus rankings, with Heath having Kittle fifth and Dave and Jamie having Kincaid fifth. So again, Kincaid, Kittle, Hockenson, Ingram. For me, it was Njoku five. Hockenson, Ingram, Kincaid. I had Kittle ninth, but I don't love it. But, you know, what was Kittle per game? This was actually his lowest
12.7.
This was his lowest per game finish in 5 or 6 years. He was tight end seven.
He has actually declined in points per game almost every season since his breakout year in 2018.
Yep. Yeah.
But I still wouldn't be surprised if 12.7 was tight end five next year.
I totally agree.
Yeah. The guy that that's interesting is Ingram. Well, they're all interesting. Let's start with Kincaid since he's kind of number one for all of you guys. What did I have? I had Kincaid eighth, but you guys had him fifth for Dave and Jamie and sixth for Heath. So yeah, did you see enough from Kincaid and are you worried about if Diggs is back? You know, I know Gabe Davis probably gone, but wasn't a huge factor, but yeah, I don't know. Are you worried about Kincaid if Diggs is in fact back? Would you move him down?
No, and I know this is a change for Dave just because I know when I wrote the story, I was the only one that had Kincaid five. So you'll see that on the site. And I was projecting Gabe Davis to be gone, you know, with the thought that maybe Diggs is gone as well. But what we saw from Kincaid throughout the season, when one of their top, I'll say 3 to 4 guys, you know, so whether you want to throw Dawson Knox in that group, certainly Gabe Davis in that group, I don't think Khalil Shakir missed any time. But whenever someone was missing, he was a superstar. And it was mostly when Dawson Knox was gone. And then at the end of the season, when we saw Davis miss, he was great. You know, and so in the playoff games, I know he didn't have a great divisional game against the Chiefs, but as you noted, Adam, on the show Sunday night, in terms of how much Josh Allen threw, he was still the most targeted option in their passing game, or second behind Diggs, led them in receptions. So you know he's going to have, I think, a step forward and should continue to get better in year two. And so I would not be surprised if I put him as high as third. Like, that's how much I like him. I think he's got that much upside. Being attached to Josh Allen in this offense, you know, and, you know, based on how Joe Brady used Stephon Diggs versus how I think he'll use Kincaid by the end of the year, he could be number one in targets on this team. You know, he's got that much potential.
Okay. Kittle. I don't know. Heath, what are your thoughts on Kittle? You have him fifth.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of thoughts on George Kittle. I think it's still going to be frustrating at times, but he's going to win you multiple weeks with monster performances. You'd obviously like Kittle more if one of the guys wasn't there going into next year. He's still going to have stretches where he doesn't score very good fantasy points and has 30 or 40 receiving yards. But again, I think he'll be around that 12 fantasy points per game, and that will be good enough to be a top five tight end.
George Kittle is still so good. He had the highest, right. I don't know, I use 40 targets. You can use whatever you want, but among tight ends with 40 targets, I think there were 37 of them last year. He had the highest explosive catch rate. He's just so good. We know he's got some quiet games, but we also know he's got huge games. In fact, for the first time in his career, he had 3 straight games with 20 or more PPR fantasy points in 2023.
His home road splits were ridiculous this year. At home, just an absolute terror.
I'm going to look up just the route, the target per route run rate when all of them were on the field.
For any,
he averaged 5.1 targets per game. I know that's not a rate that you're looking for, but
for any DFS purposes this weekend, he has 6 straight games with either 100 yards or a touchdown at home.
Wow.
And maybe no Debo.
So you're saying, Dave, when all 3 of them were healthy, you averaged 5 targets per
Debo,
game?
Yeah, Debo, Ayuk, and Kittle all on the field. There were 12 such games.
Yeah, wow, that's not good.
No, it's the efficiency. Yeah. He was really explosive, and Heath mentioned that. It's really what you hang on to when it comes to Kittle and what you hope to get out of him. And then the other part of it, too, is that you're going to draft him significantly later than the top 4 tight ends in your draft. He's the counter move to taking a tight end early.
So am I crazy for having Njoku fifth? You guys don't even have him in the top eight.
His numbers with Watson were terrible.
Awful. Yes. And it's been that way for 2 years now.
I mean, yeah, but he's still obviously he's really talented and he broke out and there just weren't a lot of numbers with Watson. And were they really that bad? I don't remember them being that bad. Week one was bad.
It's a small sample size, but they were bad.
Right. It's five games each of the last 2 years. Oh, last year it was nine PPR points per game. And this year, five games with Watson, 8.3 PPR points per game. How about 4.3 non-PPR points per game in five games with Watson?
58 yards was his high in a game with Watson in five games this year. Yeah.
And he had like twice as many fantasy points in PPR and three times as many fantasy points in non-PPR with Flacco.
And that 26-27% tight end target rate that I talked about with all the other quarterbacks in Cleveland's closer to 20% when Deshaun Watson's playing quarterback.
Okay, so it's really just a matter of how much you buy into that continuing. And, you know, I guess I could see it because Watson, I think he was throwing 2 years ago to Donovan Peoples-Jones a pretty decent amount. And last year, he was throwing to Elijah Moore a lot. And that hurt Njoku. But how about this stat? Like David Njoku, let's just compare Njoku and Ingram. They had basically the same ADOT. Okay, Ingram's ADOT was very low, 5 yards. Njoku's ADOT was 4.6 yards. Both of them were toward the bottom of ADOT. But Njoku averaged three more yards after catch per reception. He just was such a better playmaker than Evan Ingram. I don't know if that matters.
I think he is.
Yeah, he's really good. He's really emerging. He was emerging last year or 2022 before his midseason injury. He's had this great stretch. I want to buy into it. He does obviously needs more targets from Watson, so that's a problem. But I like him a lot as a player. I know it's been a very late a late breakout for him for sure. But I think he can. You know, good God, he was so good. Certainly with Flacco, but yeah, for like the last 10 games of the season or something like that, Njoku was great.
And where did he go to college?
I don't even remember. Yeah, he's a Cane. I was dying for the Giants to draft him. Let's see.
Would you take him with a top 70 pick in full PPR?
I think you don't have to. Around there.
Maybe. You don't have to, but he went 68th in our first mock. He went 95th in our half PPR.
I like that better.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, no, I'll say if I'm going to take Njoku, I'd rather take him 95th than 68th.
Well, yeah, of course.
But that's just me. Anyone in this group that we didn't talk about? Oh, Hockenson and Ingram. Yeah. So
Hockenson will be the one that falls the most for me just based on his health.
Or rises.
He won't rise for me, but he could certainly fall.
I think there are other issues, though, with Hockenson. I mean, in the first five games of the season, with a healthy Jefferson, he did get a lot of targets, but
he did.
He was only on pace for 864 yards. I don't know. He's still not like this amazing playmaker. And then you see if Addison takes another step, I'm saying, I know you're going to kill me. Visit. He could be third on his team in targets, TJ Hockenson. And that would not be good. Just saying. Cause he's never been a great per target guy. And honestly,
it's
hard to make a strong case
for Hockenson. Considering that he tore his ACL on Christmas Eve, questions about the quarterback, questions about where he'll rank in the hierarchy of targets, even in Minnesota's pass-first offense, although they probably will address that this offseason and try and make their run game a little bit stronger.
This was a good per-target year for him. I haven't really dug into Hockenson much. 7.6 yards per target. Very good.
It's fine.
It was his best. It was a career high for him. And then Ingram, Jamie, you like to talk about, who'd you talk about? Somebody. Oh, McBride after Ertz. How about Ingram after Kirk got hurt?
Yep.
And then you think, what if they don't bring back Calvin Ridley or something? But when Kirk got hurt, my God, he was on pace for 173 targets and 142 catches in those six games without Christian Kirk. That was incredible. Your thoughts on Ingram?
He's been good with Trevor Lawrence for the majority of the past two seasons. Like you said, once Christian Kirk got injured, he really took off. And that was obviously the case the year before when they didn't have Calvin Ridley. So I think he definitely needs to be first or second on the team in targets. That's going to matter to him. He's going to have to be heavily involved. I go back to, I think it was the Titans game. The broadcast said at that point he didn't score a touchdown. Trevor Lawrence was trying to make an effort to get him one. Had a couple end zone targets there in that game. at that point, the Titans had not allowed a touchdown to the position. So that continued. But right after Kirk went off, he was was injured. He went off. And, you know, you think if Ridley's not retained and they go with maybe a younger receiver, or, you know, even run it back with Zay Jones and Christian Kirk, who are both still under contract, that we see, you know, Evan Engram still be one of the more underrated tight ends. I know we go back to the, if we go back to the first mock draft we did, I took him in the 10th round. I would take that a billion times out of a billion, you know, so he's got still 80 plus catch potential. You know, I think his touchdown luck will be a little bit more spread out over the course of the season, not just having to wait to, you know, score them toward the end of the year. But obviously we have to see what they do in terms of their personnel.
And honestly, throughout the course of Jamie's career, he's probably done a billion mock drafts. So
it's true.
He's getting close to that number. All right, we're going to take a break. Just to recap the top eight, you guys had the same eight players, just in a different order. Top four were Laporta, McBride, Kelsey, and Andrews. Again, not always in the same order. And then five through eight were Kincaid, Kittle, Hockenson, and Engram. And the only difference for me was I had Njoku up there at fifth overall, and I and the other four, Hockenson, Engram, Kincaid, Kittle, were my top nine, not my top eight. So a lot of agreement there. You heard the disagreement with David Njoku. When we come back, I do have a very interesting and potentially scandalous comment in the chat. Didn't even realize this was happening behind my back. So I'll tell you, I'll clue you in on that when we come back from this break on Fantasy Football Today.
This episode is brought to you by Funnables. Funnables aren't just fruit snacks. Every bite your child takes is fuel to spark their imagination, taking them from a wild unicorn space mission to a deep sea dive into a rainbow river. Funnables are made with 7.1% real fruit puree and are an excellent source of vitamins A, C, and E. So anytime, anyplace, make snack time playtime with Funnables fruit snacks. Have fun, eat it too. Visit FunnablesSnacks.com to shop now.
The NBA playoffs are back, and on FanDuel, new customers can bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. Back in the day, news like this, your crew would have been writing each other letters.
Dearest Benjamin, wonderful news from the East. The spread has been covered.
Or maybe you'd use your phone to actually call someone.
Man, you see that dunk?
Man, I saw that dunk.
But these days, it's all about the group chat.
I love that high-fiving kitten emoji.
No matter how you tell them, let your crew know that all new FanDuel customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. Ooh, Morse code. Classic. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Okay, we're back. We're talking tight ends, but first, some drama in the FFT family here. I didn't realize this. The only two, I guess three people that have control over which hosts are in which box, if you're watching. We have a four box.
Mm-hmm.
And Aaron says, whoa, is Heath hosting? He is in the one spot of Hollywood Squares. You pulled a fast one on me. I didn't even realize that you had taken the top left. You took the host.
I had nothing to do with it. I simply logged in and hit the button to join. And now I knew it was going to bother you once you recognized
it. Like, yeah,
could not let that stand once you actually recognized that it happened.
Yep. Well, everything has been remedied. I am in the host chair once again. All right, let's get to 9 through 12 in our tight end rankings. Host Heath, you can go first.
Cole Kmet, who is a guy that I'd like to rank higher, so I might move him up at some point this offseason. Cole Kmet, then Njoku, then Goddard, then Jake Ferguson.
Kmet, Njoku, Dallas Goddard, Jake Ferguson. Okay, Dave.
I have Njoku at 9th. I've got Ferguson 10th. I have Kyle Pitts at 11, Cole Kmet at 12. At least two of those guys are going to be bounced out once Brock Bowers enters the National Football League.
He's going to bump two of your guys out of the rankings?
At least.
is he number one and number two?
What do you mean?
Why would Bowers knock two of them out and not just...
Because he's going to be like 10. Oh, no, he would knock out only one. But he will push down multiple guys. Oh, I'm sorry.
Push
I misspoke.
Down, push down.
Heath gets to the left.
Tight end one is Brock. Tight end two is Bowers.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I get it. He's going to push
He
down.
Might be that good. He was awesome at Georgia. Of course, once upon a time, we talked like this about Kyle Pitts. We'll see.
All right, Jamie, how about you?
Njoku, Pitts, Ferguson, and Kmet. And if I was redoing it now, Kmet would be ahead of Ferguson.
Why not just redo it?
Well, I mean, we're putting the link to the story on the site, so I'm keeping it same.
Yeah, I definitely screwed up. Pitts is behind Kmet. So Kmet, Pitts, Njoku, Goddard.
Yeah, Pitts would be the one that's going to rise the most for me, most likely, when we get the hopeful coaching upgrade.
Okay.
I'm going to need a quarterback upgrade.
I can't imagine there'd be a downgrade.
That's true.
And then I have I have one really stupid ranking that I need to replace with Kmet, and it's Luke Musgrave. I mean, we'll see. Number two, second year tight ends, they just doesn't really matter what they do in their rookie season necessarily. They have big second years sometimes. I don't think it's going to be Musgrave. I just too many mouths to feed there. But I would put Kmet 12th. I would have Kittle 9, Ferguson, Pitts, Kmet. But Heath, your rankings are really interesting because you have Kmet the highest. You have him 9th, and you've Goddard in there. No one else had Goddard, right? You have him 11th. So basically the consensus 9 through 12 would be Njoku, probably Kmet Pitts or Pitts Kmet, and then Ferguson would be in there too, with also a Dallas Goddard vote, and I'm removing my Luke Musgrave vote. Heath, what's why the so much confidence in Kmet? Why are you the highest?
I'm ranking somebody tight end 9. Yeah. That is not expressing any confidence at all. You were talking about tight ends who are breaking out. Kmet showed a lot of signs, had some monster games last year, a 700-yard season as a 24-year-old, and I fully expect that the passing game, one way or another, is going to be much better. We talk about guys who are first or second on their team in targets. As of right now, that should certainly be the expectation. Expectation with Kmet.
Better or worse if it's Caleb Williams?
We don't know, but probably better, because if nothing else, I think there'll be more pass attempts.
All right, how about Kyle Pitts? So Heath, I'll go to you again. You're not putting Pitts in your top 12 right now?
No, I just moved him in my top 12 just moments ago. You missed that. But he's I think tight end 11 now for me. I got to update, check my rankings here. Listen, I think the fact
you
that
he's one guy up and bump three guys now.
Yeah. The fact that he is getting a new coach is I'm going to push back a little bit on it. Can't be worse than Arthur Smith. There are more than 7 teams that are interested in hiring him as their offensive coordinator. I also need a good coach, an offensive minded coach, preferably, or a good offensive great coordinator. And I definitely need a quarterback upgrade.
That's the thing.
Right. And it can't be a kind of upgrade. I need him to have someone who I think could be not bad.
For what it's worth, Pitts acknowledged that he wasn't healthy all year.
Right.
He said, each week was trying to get better, keep getting stronger, and, just doing what I need to get back to the bionic knee that I used to have, the natural knee, after surgery. I saw that on ESPN. So
I think Ben Johnson, obviously, it's and a quarterback upgrade, it's to the moon. I'm much less confident that Bill Belichick would be a good thing for anybody in Atlanta.
It's funny, though, because, for years it was – man, Bill Belichick's offense is for tight ends.
Yeah,
they've been fairly successful. Look, it's the quarterback is going to really sway how we view Pitts. But clearly, I think if it's Ben Johnson, if it's Bobby Slowick, I still take Belichick. With the right offensive coordinator. I'm excited about him. It's 2 years of down production after a 1,000-yard rookie season. If he's healthy. In the right scenario, would not be surprised if he can be the unicorn we've been waiting for him to become.
Isn't part of the allure the fact that we're not drafting him with a top 60 pick, though?
Yeah.
Top 100 pick? I mean, that's
for sure.
That's the real allure.
And there's some people that might even scoff at top 100 because they're just so snake bitten.
Well, I wouldn't draft him with a top 100 pick if
the quarterback situation doesn't change.
Sure.
I think that's kind of, you know, if we're talking about start, I'll say starting around 8 or 9, you know, and you're still looking at probably the tight end groups that are going to, the tight end group that's going to be available to you. Ferguson will probably still be on the board. I would think Komet's still going to be on the board. Musgrave will still be on the board. Dalton Schultz, depending on where he signs, will most likely still be on the board. You take two of those guys and just hope that Pitts becomes that alpha. You're in good shape. You know, if you're taking him as your only tight end and not covering yourself, you're probably making a mistake, even if he does get all these things, just based on, we still have to see it.
Like, there's a wide range. What if it's Bill Belichick and Jimmy Garoppolo?
Then Bill Belichick won't be in Atlanta very long.
No, I would be okay with that. I mean, I don't really think that Bill Belichick is the X factor here. It's whoever he hires as his offensive coordinator.
Right. The thought is
okay. Josh McDaniels.
If it's Josh McDaniels and Jimmy Garoppolo and Kyle Pitts, I definitely think he could be tight end 5.
Okay.
Look, first of all, there's two things.
Oh, good. I'm with you.
Tight end 5 is not that hard to achieve.
No, what if it's Ben Johnson and Kirk Cousins?
Yeah, then he could be tight end 1.
Then it would be crazy, and people would go, they'd be hyped up to draft Kyle Pitts.
You would be using a top 50 pick on him, probably.
Do we still believe in him?
That you might be interested to know about Pitts. Like, he was one of these tight ends that was second on his team in targets. Wasn't a lot of targets per game last year, but he was second. He's had a ton of uncatchable targets in his 3 years in the NFL. And his best year for that was 2021, when it wasn't Desmond Ridder and it wasn't Taylor Heineke. And the last 2 years have been at least 20% of his throws were uncatchable. In 2022, more than a third of them were uncatchable. So I think he's got a chance, but let's go back to the very first thing that you brought up with him, Adam, and that's his health. Yeah. If he can't get his knee right, he'll never be explosive. And then he's going to need a lot of targets. He's going to need a coordinator that's going to throw and concentrate those targets to two people every game. And that's just something that Arthur never really did. And the one thing that we want Arthur Smith to do, and he finally did toward the end of the year, was give the ball, at least hand off the ball to one guy. So I there's some room for this to not change for Pitts, which is why if you're getting him around, like, he went 70th or better in our two first mocks. I'm not ready to go there with him, but 80th, 90th overall, I think that's reasonable. And I think there's room for him to grow from there. Top 5, that's going to be tough. But for now, I think top 11, which is where we have him, it's fine.
I'm going to give you a Pitts stat here, something that might need to change. He's been in the league 3 years. Again, I use the 40 target threshold. Among those tight ends every year, he's led the position in ADOT. Highest ADOT among tight ends every single year. And look, that can work if you've got, maybe if you've got the good quarterback play. I mean, like, for example, in 2021, Mark Andrews was second in ADOT, and that was Andrews, you know, huge year, 1,361 yards, 9 touchdowns. You know, but I don't know. I just feel like with a lot of these tight ends, Njoku, Ingram, Laporta, Hockenson to a degree, I mean, they get a lot of short area, easy catches. They get a lot of PPR cheap points, and we need that in PPR. We need that.
Yeah, but I've said this a few times. Part, I think, of the reason his ADOT is so high and what you're talking about, Adam, is that they misuse him. You know, he's running a lot of wide receiver routes.
Yeah, he's consistently among the leaders, if not the leader in that as well, of routes run as a wide receiver. So I think we like that, but you don't want it as much. You definitely want your tight end split out wide, but they could do it less frequently. So I think just some easier short area catches would be nice. Let him make some plays after the catch. He's capable of it. All right, just something to think about with Kyle Pitts. And that's our top 12 tight ends right now on January 24th for PPR. I'll read a few more emails here before we bounce. We got another show tomorrow. fantasyfootball@cbsi.com is the email address. And I don't have a name or a city here, Dave. Help me out.
Doris from Sacramento, California.
Dear Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath, and Dan, if he's on the show, for comic relief. And then the PS said, don't let Dan construe my above comment to mean that he's the funniest. The real funniest part of the show is hearing all the stories about him. Okay, thank you for clarifying that, Doris. The upcoming season will be the first time I've ever been in a dynasty league. Thanks to y'all, I've been dominating my redraft leagues and I'm looking for a new challenge. The site we are going to be on allows for fab trading. How would you approach fab trading? And do you prefer non, half, or full PPR?
Half.
Half is where we're headed.
Yeah. To quote Bernie Mac in Bad Santa, half. Okay, anyway, trading fab. What do you think about that? How do you approach that? I guess I'll start. Go ahead.
I think it's fun. I've done it in a few leagues. Yeah. And you just, you know, okay, if you're trading player for player and somebody needs to sweeten the deal a little bit, you know, here's 10 fab points, here's 20, you know, whatever the case may be. You know, you treat it as if you treat a player, you know, so it's like cash considerations. You know, if you think that player is worth, if you think the average free agent or whatever the case may be, you know, is worth 5 free agent points, 10 free agent points, you know, if somebody's been hoarding their fab budget, they might be willing to consider that. So yeah, I like it. I think it's just an added element to, you know, making trades more fun.
I like it. The only league I have where we do it is also one where the all player acquisition is done via auctions. And so that is also part of your bankroll for the rookie draft in the future or for the next free agent auction. So it depends on is it just limited to this year? Is that something you carry over year over year? But it's also a good way if you're not competing this year, don't go to the end of the year with that fab money. If you're going to lose it at the end of the year, trade that to somebody for a second or third round draft pick.
Also should point out, you've never done a dynasty league before, Doris. The waiver wire is not nearly as good. So you might not find the fab to be quite as valuable. You're not going to be
It depends on how deep the league is.
It's true. Yeah. And like one guy in our league, in our Big Burger Dynasty League, he for some reason he dropped Deontay Johnson. And someone I think spent every fab dollar, if not every, it was very close to $100 of fab. But that doesn't happen. I mean, that doesn't really happen often. But just keep that in mind. All right, last one here is from, another one? I didn't put the name or city. Dave, who's this from?
Blanche from Overland Park, Kansas.
What is this, just the Golden Girls, basically?
There's no Doris on the
I know, Girl. But like, there may as well be. It's probably their neighbor. 10-team super flex, half PPR. Start 3 receivers and 3 flexes. I have, remember, it's super flex here. I have picks 1 and 4. Quarterbacks are Kyler, Russell Wilson, and Trevor Lawrence.
Okay.
Wide receivers are St. Brown, Jamar Chase, Tyreek Hill, Stephon Diggs, and Josh Downs. Wow. I'm definitely taking a QB and a wide receiver, but my question is, would you rather have Caleb Williams and Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison and Jaden Daniels?
There's zero chance if I have the 1-on-1 in Superflex, I'm not taking Caleb Williams.
Yeah, this is an easy one for me. I'd take Williams and Nabers.
I heard that sigh, Heath.
Yeah, that was a big one.
Well, I'm just like, I'm thinking, like, I don't even remember. I'm terrible with remembering draft classes, but like, who were the top quarterback prospects in Justin Jefferson or Jamar Chase's class? I think there's a pretty decent chance that I'd rather have those guys than that quarterback in Superflex.
Right, but you're still getting Malik Nabers in this scenario. He's going to be a top maybe 8 pick overall in the NFL draft.
So what percentage chance do we think there is that Jaden Daniels is better for fantasy than Caleb Williams?
Yeah, but you might have gotten in that draft class on your rookie draft, Joe Burrow and Jalen Reagor.
Right. Or Justin Jefferson and who would have been the second?
Oh, that quarterback class, now that Jordan Love is playing like he has in 2020, is 5 deep, you know, so I guess the question would be, would you rather have Caleb Williams and Nabers or Tua and Jefferson?
And that's assuming that Jaden Daniels is going to be what Tua is.
So actually the first receiver drafted that year was Ruggs, then Judy, then Lamb, then Reagor, then Jefferson. And the top 3 quarterbacks were Burrow, Tua, Herbert. So I don't think Jefferson would have even come into this equation personally. It would have been like, would you rather have, you know, I don't even want to get into Henry Ruggs stuff.
I've got a lot of research to do on these guys still, but first impressions of these guys, I think I'd probably go Harrison and Daniels.
I would too.
Ooh, wow.
The Superflex draft that year probably was Burrow, Herbert, Tua, Herbert in the first three picks.
Yeah.
I bet people were fired up about Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He was the last pick of the first round.
He jumped Jonathan Taylor to be 101 amongst non-QBs.
Right.
When that happened by consensus, and it's been a joke ever since.
Yeah, I also think we have to acknowledge there's got to be some downside here with Jaden Daniels. He's one of these like fast rising prospects. He wasn't, I think, like everyone knew Caleb Williams last year. Everyone knew Caleb Williams would be.
Well, Joe Burrow was one of those fast rising prospects.
And so was Anthony Richardson. And he's so far, you know, I can't really make a judgment, but so far looks pretty good. I don't know. I just feel like, all right, we're split here. Jamie and I are going Williams and Neighbors. Heath and Dave are going Harrison and Jaden Daniels. Okay. But I don't know. It's interesting that you think that those guys are definitely going to be available at four. And where does Drake May fall into this equation as well?
Well, in a super flex draft, you assume it's going to probably be Williams, May, Harrison would be my guess.
Yes. In some order.
No, I think Daniels will go ahead of May. Very possibly.
He might.
Those would be the first four picks, I would say. All right.
Yeah, there's no running back that's jumping those guys right now in Superflex.
And then what about Bowers? You know, it's Bowers.
I don't think in Superflex he does, but if he does, he knocks out three guys of the top five.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, for your emails and for watching and for listening and for voting. Go do that. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Fantasy Football Today.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.